Well, the you know, I guess there was some confusion, and also there were some dissenters. I guess Roxana Castapace and I guess Scott Graham, Keith Sugar even were really withholding judgment as to whether this was some kind of a victory, as Celia and Catherine were suggesting, and other people were saying what a victory it was. I myself noted that throughout the rest of the evening, at the city council meeting on Tuesday night and early Wednesday morning, there were 5-2 vote after 5-2 vote, slicing everything that Celia and Catherine, or virtually everything, or certainly significant amendments proposed by them, such as, you know, guarantee the place of our garden, or that the organic the community garden, so that it stays where it is. Make sure there's a public process for the La Bahia project. Did you note anything else that came up that you saw go down to 5-2? Or
every significant difference between the Scott Byers set of proposals and the Hernandez Kennedy Rotkin set of proposals went down to that 5-2 defeat, and I generally thought that the Scott Byers proposals were much meatier and more substantive, whereas the Hernandez stuff was just fluff.
Well, the Beach Area Working Group, which really has a, along with your Beach Flats Residents Association, is that what it is?
The
Beach
Neighborhood Association.
Neighborhood Association, Roxana Castapace's Friends of the Beach, We Will with Lisa Johnson, numerous other groups who got together and brought residents from the Beach Flats down to the Civic Auditorium. You know, Doug Rand and others who have worked tirelessly to bring this issue to the community attention. Some of you got together, and I guess it was late yesterday, and it's a Beach Area Working Group. And how did you were going to propose a referendum to overturn the settlement, and yet I guess that's not happening now. So some people are trusting in their city council members. I mean, what's going on here?
No, I think there's a rapidly reviving sense of reality after the initial euphoria caused by the appearance of something of a victory there. I think people are beginning to recognize the, pyrrhic?
Pyrrhic,
there you go.
A victory that isn't really a victory, but
exactly.
A victory where
you lose so many troops in the battle that you're no longer able to win the next round. I think people are beginning to realize that they've basically been had here, that the big kicker was the Tidelands thing. Had the Tidelands thing gone the way it should have gone, that is to say, Tidelands been retained as public trust land the way it's supposed to be, then that would have meaningfully enforced this so-called scaling back of the plan, because it would have pulled out from under them much of the property that is required for the plan. But now that the city is moving to provide the Seaside Company with a clear title on this, then pulling back these various elements of the plan, Third Street realignment, expansion, amusement park, full-blown retail, commercial space, etc., that's very easily done. And now that they have at least started the process, or they think they've started the process, which clears the title for the land.
You know, had the Beach Area Working Group come to some decision to either put this up for referendum or find an attorney to challenge it in court?
That's still sort of up in the air. People, you know, this whole thing happened 2 days ago. Nothing that happened was really anticipated exactly. The whole thing was done, all the decision making was done basically in closed session, to an extent that our own mayor didn't know what was going on. And so I think a lot of us are taking a little time to digest it and try to figure out, is it real, is it Memorex, is it meaningful scaling back, or is it an appearance of scaling back? what is the thing with the tire, so on and so forth. But my prediction is that within the next week or so, you're going to see a certain sobering up and a renewed and increased sense of outrage at the way we've been snookered here.
Well, you know, we don't have too long because the referendum has to happen within a month.
Yes.
That vote. And also, of course, we are going to be seeing people coming to the beach boardwalk on Saturday at noon at Cliff and Beach Streets. For those of you listeners who want to be a part of an ongoing protest and educational interaction and a sort of a dialogue to find out what next, and some pickets on the boardwalk to, again, demand that there be some real acknowledgement that we have a situation where the houses that are being they're still slated to be bulldozed. I mean, they are, I guess, the La Bahia project and the Mercy Housing, which the Mercy Housing affordable housing thing is going ahead, right? Which means the bulldozing of housing, right?
Yes.
And isn't that the seizure of some housing within by eminent domain?
Yes.
And do we have a timetable on that?
No, but Mercy Housing at least is acting like they've got it all wrapped up.
So,
and it was interesting to me that after we supposedly rejected Seaside Company so cruelly on the Victory Realignment Expansion of the boardwalk, that they're still willing to kick in a piece of land for the Mercy Housing Project. That clearly suggests to me that they didn't feel too hurt by what happened the other night at all. And they've been given reason to believe that in the end it's all going to work out for their best interests.
Interesting. You know, Steve Hartman, whose show I was on today on KSCO for 2 hours, we kicked around this topic whenever I could get a word in edgewise. Well, Steve is a hard man to break through the verbal the verbal barrier there, but a friendly guy nonetheless.
Yeah.
He was, you know, talking about poor Seaside Company being a whipped dog and so forth. Well, you know, I want to go on with you about this, but unfortunately I have a couple of other guests I want to call, and also I have a man in the studio. So
sure, anytime, Robert. You know, I just sit here stewing in this stuff, so anytime.
All right, well, we will come back to your stew and taste some more of it, perhaps even later this evening.
Very good.
Thank you.
Thank you, Robert.
And you're tuned to Free Radio Santa Cruz, 96.3 FM. I'm Bathrop Spear, Robert Norris, your host on this two-hour show. We got another hour and a half to go. So let's press forward. We're going to be greeting our next guest in just a moment. That's Berkeley Billy, who's been, 6 nights sleeping out at the post office in violation of the city's anti-homeless sleeping ban, urging people to join him and stand up for the rights of homeless people who are otherwise not just disenfranchised, but essentially disappeared from public spaces under threat of jail or a $162 fine. Those who followed my show know about this sleeping ban. Before we talk to him, and he's got some other issues he's going to raise about the Homeless Community Resource Center personnel and assaults out there and so forth, let's get a little of Phil Oakes's 1960s view of how liberals were treating these issues back then.
Cried when they shot Medgar Evers. Tears ran down my spine. And I cried when they shot Mr. Kennedy, as though I'd lost a father of mine. But Malcolm X got what was coming. He got what he asked for this time. So love me, love me, love me. I'm a liberal. Get it? I go to civil rights rallies, and I put down the old D.A.R. D.A.R., that's the Dykes of the American Revolution. I love Harry and Sidney and Sammy. Hope every colored boy becomes a star. But don't talk about revolution. That's going a little bit too far. So love me, love me, love me. I'm a liberal. I cheered when Humphrey was chosen. My faith in the system restored. And I'm glad that the commies were thrown out from the AFL-CIO bar. And I love Puerto Ricans and Negroes. As long as they to move next door. Say, love me, love me, love me, I'm a liberal. Ah, the people of old Mississippi should all hang their heads in shame. Now I can't understand how their minds work. What's the matter, don't they watch, less pray? But if you ask me to boss my children, I hope the cops take down your name. So love me, love me, love me, I'm a liberal. Yes, I read New Republic and Nation. I've learned to take every view. You know, I've memorized Lerner and Golden. I feel like I'm almost a Jew. But when it comes to times like Korea, there's no one more red, white, and blue. So love me, love me, love me, I'm a liberal. I vote for the Democratic Party. They want the UN to be scrapped. I attend all the Pete Seeger concerts. Each year gets me singing the song. And I'll send all the money you ask for, but don't ask me to come on along. So love me, love me, love me, I'm a liberal. Sure, once I was young and impulsive, I wore every conceivable pin. Even went to socialist meetings, learned all the old union hymns. Ah, but I've grown older and wiser, and that's why I'm turning you in. So love me, love me, love me, I'm a liberal.
And that, of course, was Love Me, I'm a Liberal from Phil Oakes' Tape from California, one of the finest songs of that period. With me in the studio is Billy
Godwin. They call me Berkeley Billy.
Yeah, Berkeley Billy. Billy Godwin. Billy, you BB, so to speak. And BB, you've been packing your sleeping bag around town. I often find you kind of near the coffee roasting company in the evenings, chatting with folks on the streets. And additionally, when it comes time to plop your head on the pillow, you lie on the stone steps of the post office. That can't be terribly comfortable up there. Why do you do that?
Well, you know, the locals have instituted a sleeping ban here, and we've tried to repeal all of these poor laws. This is one of the poor laws that they put, the rich against the poor. We've repealed that up in Berkeley, and so we're trying to do the same thing down here, because they're so very unjust. And so I'm just doing my part, you know, what I can do to help repeal this, and try to put some pressure to bear. I mean, if they can't bust me, then I become visible, and I'm also basically a thorn in their side. And so that's exactly what I do.
You know, I find that very encouraging, and particularly so when I compare it with the mealy-mouthed blather from the city council candidates, people who I otherwise respect. And, you know, I'd like to see Fitzmaurice, Sugar, and Crone win. But I discussed this in the last show, how disillusioned I was when I heard that Sugar was backing away from his position supporting an end to the sleeping ban, taking a forthright human rights position that you cannot arrest someone for sleeping, particularly when there's no legal places for them to sleep. And I believed this for a decade. It seems to me, well, I probably believed this for two or three decades and haven't actually put it forth as such, at least two decades. The sleeping ban has been in Santa Cruz for two decades now, since 1978. We have circulated an initiative called the Sleeping Ban Repeal Initiative, which actually is a very mild version. It doesn't even allow you to camp and protect yourself with a ground cloth or a tent or cook food. It simply says you can't be arrested for falling asleep, which is an involuntary function at a certain point, and at least not in certain areas. There have to be legal areas for people to sleep. This is as obvious as 2 plus 2 equals 4. I mean, there's no way around it unless you somehow believe that a certain class of people doesn't deserve basic rights and deserves to be dumped out of town somewhere as a kind of an Okie or a Jews or Gypsies were by different kinds of tyrannical populations at different times in the history of different countries. And of course, I'm sure that no Santa Cruzan likes to think of himself as that kind of, dare I say it, fascist bigot. And why does one say fascist? Well, you know, people will say, why do you use the word fascist? Why do you use the word Nazi? Well, I'm talking about policies designed to penalize a particular group. What am I going to call you? Serbian autocrats? All right, you know, going after Albanians? Anyway, it's policies that target a class of people. And I thought we had an agreement with these city council candidates, Fitzmaurice, Crone, and Sugar, and Clark, that they were against this sleeping ban as a step one. You don't arrest people for sleeping. But unfortunately, the more I talk to these guys, the more they slip and slide and slither and talk about community consensus and say, I don't want to be the first one to bring this up. And they're saying, oh, what if it defeats me? And Ratkin's looking for an issue and every possible little excuse you can imagine, which I guess passes for smart politics in Santa Cruz. But I'm going to tell you, I'm getting fed up with it. I'm getting sick of it. You have to start with a basic human rights position or you have got no position whatsoever. That's how I view it. And I know that people like Nora Hockman and other big rigs in the scan constellation or the labor movement will tell me that, well, you know, you've got to win the election. Then you worry about passing all these wonderful goodies. I say, no. You don't know what's going to happen to candidates after they win elections. We had three progressives who called themselves progressives elected in 1988. Don Lane, Mo Reisch, and Marty Wernhout. Was it Marty Wernhout? No, Jane Yokoyama. These were the three, and they made statements about legal places for people to sleep and not arresting people in affordable housing, and they gave us years of arrests of homeless people under Chiefs Belcher and Bassett, two police chiefs who live in infamy mainly through their mediocrity. They weren't that violent or brutal, but you have to understand that nightly harassment of homeless people through these kinds of laws is a form of low-grade, endless, low-intensity warfare. It is a form of brutality. Anyway, I'm in my soapbox here, and I'm just saying, Billy, that I guess I'm saying to any candidates or friends of the candidates who are listening, these candidates have to hold firm on this issue, not just because it's an issue that I want to see pass, but because it's a basic touchstone. If you don't believe people have the right to sleep, well, why should they have the right to sit down? Why should they have the right to have a bench to sit on? Why should they have the right to peacefully ask for spare change? Why should they have the right to basic civil liberties in social programs? You know, why not all leave it up to Karen Gillette and those other social service providers to decide who should have rights here and there, as has, in fact, been the de facto situation for the last 5 or 6 years in this community. The so-called progressives on city council, first under Don Lane, then under Scott Kennedy, and other mayors, and even under Celia Scott. There's no serious challenge to the ongoing policies. And you yourself, I notice you have quite a shiner on the right, on your right eye. You know, I think we talked about this, but what happened there?
There was a group of guys out there. They were basically drug dealer thug types.
Straight out there, out where?
Out of the homeless resource, HCRC, we call it, resource center. Basically, drug dealing thug types, straight out of the pen. And one of them stole my guitar, and that's where the trouble started. And I had someone who witnessed them stealing the guitar. So I confronted them about it, and one of them just kind of sucker punched me for bringing it up. And then another one of the guys came up to me and told me, you better mind your P's and Q's here, or I'm going to drop you. Now, you know what drop means, okay? So it was basically a threat against my life, you know, more so than just than a sucker punch, okay?
This was on HCRC property that these threats occurred?
Oh, yes, it was right there in the yard. They have an inside part and a yard part. It was out in the yard part.
did you then go to Karen Gillette to talk about this with her?
I did talk with her yesterday morning about it, because I had heard her overheard her talking about something about heroin dealing. I couldn't hear it very well, but I heard her mention heroin dealing, and she was kind of whispering to this other guy. So I took my shades off and I go, "Yeah, well, look what happened to me," you know. And she became very defensive at that point, you know, and she told me that since I had not gone to the police with it, which I really don't like dealing with the police, that's antithetical to my own position, I believe security ought to be local, you know, and we take care of things locally, especially in shelter areas. And that is her position, to make ensure that that sort of thing happens. She pretty much became extremely defensive and hostile towards me and told me that, okay, well, that's okay if you want to be a victim. I said, excuse me? You know, I want to be a victim in your shelter here, you know, and she stormed off and went into the building there.
So you were looking for help from her and she didn't want to give it to you?
No, she didn't give me any help at all. She was extremely hostile towards me.
Well, what kind of help were you looking for?
I was just, I wanted to explain to her what had happened and see if we could get a little discussion about this, but she wasn't willing to discuss anything. So this morning I went to Mike Busto.
Mike Bustos?
Mike Bustos, and I spoke to him about what had happened.
Mike Bustos, of course, is sort of the in charge of the Homeless Community Resource Center. He has stepped into the position that Karen Gillette previously held. She sort of stepped up to oversee both all three services, Homeless Community Resource Center, ISSP, and Community House.
Yeah, and Mike Bustos had me explain to him what had happened, and he assured me that he would take care of things, and sure enough, he did. He took care of things. I can't call them gentlemen, because they definitely weren't very gentle, but he 86'd them off of the property, so they're no longer there, no longer a threat to the women and children and the disabled and the elderly that have to stay there, as well as myself. You know, that was what my main concern was, is, you know, people getting things stolen out there left and right, and it's a little gang of people that do that, you know, and it's like, if the staff there, you know, aren't helping to curb this sort of activity, then all you can say is, oh, you must be complicit within it, you know. That's the best that I can come up with, because, you know, when security is non-existent, you start thinking, well, what, who's involved with what here, you know. And there's a couple of people out there that are on the staff that are extremely rude people. They act like they're doing you a favor by being there, you know, and that's exactly the opposite of what it actually is. So I did like Mike. I remember Mike from 3 years ago when I stayed out there, and he's a really nice guy, and he did take care of business on his own, and I congratulate him for that. I support him 100%.
It's ironic, because if some of these people who perhaps stole your guitar or were violent come to me, and I've actually talked to people who've been evicted from the Homeless Community Resource Center. Don't recall if it was for theft. I think probably one guy was evicted for theft, mostly for things like drinking or something. There was some concern that they were evicted for long, long periods of time and not able to eat there, and therefore it penalized them. And of course, what we really want to see is some kind of change in this process, and so that people will come in, use the facilities, and not feel it's appropriate to steal, even if they might have predilections in that way or feel the need to do that or have some sort of racket where that's run in some other venue, you know, or venue.
One of the changes I'd like to see made is that, you know, staff personnel out there are not even identifiable. They look just like everyone else. And they need to wear at least something like a badge or something, you know, with
their arms in black boots, perhaps?
Well, no. We're not gonna get into the mainstream sort of situation like we see out here on the street, but what we could have is at least some badge with the name on it saying staff, you know, so
they're responsible and they know they have to take some proactive position.
Yes.
Not necessarily issue orders, but at least involve themselves in some kind of a dialogue.
Sure, you know, watch the yard, make sure that the stuff that people do have out there is safe and secure, you know, so that no one has to worry about, I gotta watch my stuff the whole time I'm there, because the staff personnel are too busy doing other things, like sitting around somewhere where they're not watching anything.
Eating the choicest cuts of the food that comes in that doesn't get to the general population.
Or taking the best clothes that come in from the donations, you know, that sort of thing.
I'm not saying that this happens recently or now, though I've heard it was happening in the past. I don't know if it's happening now. You also apparently, I saw you downtown near where Street Spirit, the homeless paper, is distributed. For those who are interested in distributing Street Spirit, which you can sell for $1, you should get in touch with Job Finder John, who's frequently near the bookshop Santa Cruz, and he's a clean-shaven young guy. How would you describe the way he looks?
I think the way you said it was pretty close. He's a very, very clean shaven.
Ask around if you want street spirits. You get the first 10 free, and then you pay a dime each and sell them for a dollar. There's going to be a bunch of them coming out shortly. We expect the new October issue to be out shortly. It gets published in San Francisco by the American Friends Service Committee, and this issue has a story on the front page about the beach flats and how it affects poor people and so forth in that issue. And as you heard from commentator Phil Baer, this issue is hardly and certainly far from resolved, and that we need to not just look at the beach flats issue, of course, coming down the pike, but all these other redevelopment scams that the Rotkin Matthews Council is going to try to ram down our throats one after another very quickly by the same 5-2 majority that they were prepared to pass the entire beach flats boondoggle, except that it began to look like they might all get recalled or, who knows, pelted with tomatoes, burned in effigy, and also they'd lose their majority because they were developing such animosity against them that it appeared that the three candidates, Crone, Sugar, and Fitzmaurice, might be swept directly into power, and still, hopefully, will be swept into power. Hopefully, they'll learn a little backbone on these human rights issues, which I really think they need to stand up for. They need to be able, they don't have to campaign on them and say that's what they're beating the drums for, but when asked, they have to say, no jail for sleep, period. No, thank you. You know, that's a basic human position. If they can't even get that far, they don't belong in the political arena as far as any kind of homeless rights advocates go.
Well, you know, we decry this sort of behavior when we look at it overseas, you know, in other countries. We have a thing called Amnesty International. And, you know, we see human rights abuses around the world and we go, oh, isn't that terrible? Isn't that the worst thing? Those people are just horrible. They're so uncivilized. And then we come back home and we look exactly what they do to their own people here. And, you know, we wouldn't allow this to go on overseas. Why are we allowed to go on here? It's like, you know, we have a complete authoritarian system here. And it's basically a discriminatory sort of thing. You've got what are called poor laws. And it's basically it's a class struggle again. We get back to a more Marxist sort of situation here, where it's the rich versus the poor. And, you know, they want them to be out of sight and out of mind, so they don't have to think about them and get them off of what's left of their consciences, basically. This is basically a petty bourgeois ideal. It used to be called petty bourgeois. Now it's called yuppie, okay? But it's still basically the same sort of activity. You know, we've seen it up in Berkeley, and we've gotten rid of it. We put pressure on the city council up there. They've repealed just about every kind of poor law you can imagine that they've tried to put in here.
I wish you were right. Berkeley still has laws against being in people's park at night, being in other parks at night, has laws against sleeping in your vehicle. I think Berkeley's got a long way to go, but it is true that that mainly by court pressure and because of your one thin vote majority, I think you had a 5-4 vote to turn back the sitting ban. I mean, I think you're not, you know, I mean, and the one vote that did that councilwoman, I remember hearing her talk. She was going on about, well, you people better behave yourself or I'll change my vote again, as though, you know, the civil rights of poor people were sort of based on whether they're well-mannered or not. I mean, it's incredible.
But the solidarity there is much, much more complete than it is down here. You have to admit to that. The people put pressure on they wanted to do a cleanup of Telegraph Avenue this summer, and they stepped up enforcement personnel, police personnel, up on the street. I mean, it looked like a fascist Gestapo police state, basically, up and down Telegraph Avenue.
Don't use those words. Andy Ross will get mad at you.
Oh, Andy. Well, Andy backs all of that sort of behavior, you know, by the police. He's the one that calls them in. He's the first one to cry and whine about it. You know.
Andy Ross is the Neil Kunde of Telegraph Avenue. He owns a bookshop. Called Cody's, just as Neil Kunde owns the bookshop Santa Cruz. By the way, peripherally about which, when I saw you downtown earlier, I learned that the flower kiosk in front of the bookshop Santa Cruz has been kicking musicians out of the area in front of Georgiana's Cafe, which is what I call the Kunde Cafe, because it is the cafe that I and activist Jack Light John Hamilton were gathering signatures against the sleeping ban in front of in 1993, and as a consequence, Kunde, who was then a mayor and then subsequently on the city council for another year, pushed his anti-homeless downtown ordinances, or the pool laws as you call them. And one of those pool laws was you cannot perform in front of a cafe on the public sidewalk if the cafe reaches out into the sidewalk. In other words, the public sidewalk then becomes a part of the private business, this privatization, sort of creeping privatization taking over. And, you know, we hadn't seen too much use of this law. I would say to I would say to musicians as I pass by, watch out, you're performing illegally. And they'd say, well, no one's ever given me any trouble. And I'll say, just wait. They can do it whenever they feel like it. And that apparently is what's happening. I mean, it's like Kathy, the flower lady, I'm not sure what her name is, apparently has been doing this, according to some of the local performers and homeless folks. And there's actually a mention of it in the new publication Starstruck, which folks may be aware of. Starstruck is now has its second issue. It's a kind of a monthly publication. One issue is August 1st. This issue is September 21st, issue 2, by Tom Connor, or Ozzy Mogul, as he calls himself. He writes about the situation downtown, and he has this to say about that. He says, get a load of this. The Downtown Merchants Association has now chosen to hire street artists to perform in front of their establishments. For this, they receive anywhere from $75 to $150 American. How patently incongruous that hired performers from out of the neighborhood are allowed to fly in the face of municipal code, while many obviously talented musicians line Pacific Avenue asking no more than the right to sing for their supper. This is also curious in light of the fact that this reporter was offered an opportunity some months ago to perform in front of a downtown business in exchange for a small fee. I was informed by an officer of the beat this would be a violation of the Muni Code and that I would be subject to citation. What are the standards that determine this selective enforcement? It's actually, you're allowed to perform provided you're a certain distance away from a window, have your own little chair or performing device. You want to say something?
Yeah, you know, it's incredible to think that here in the land of the free and the home of the brave, we do this sort of thing to our own people. When you go to a place like Paris or London, they welcome musicians there. They really enjoy having them around. It adds to the ambiance of the place. You come back home and it's just totally restrictive sort of situation. We go, oh, freedom, freedom, freedom. And it's nothing more than a catchword at this point, isn't it?
Freedom for businesses to expand and to essentially squeeze others out of the spaces that are supposed to be public spaces. We saw it happening in Salinas until the panhandling law was thrown out about a month ago. In any case, not only are they paying some musicians to perform on the mall, apparently, but they're also barring other musicians from being on the mall who are particularly good musicians, but who this flower lady doesn't like, and who are, you know, apparently the laws now empower people with prejudice or preferences to run other people away. Now, we used to have a thing called, and still have a thing, called the Street Performers Guidelines, designed in 1980 and voluntarily agreed to by street performers back then, which essentially said, you know, if somebody doesn't like what you're doing, they should come up to you, whether it's another performer who wants to use the space, a merchant is getting tired of hearing the same tune, or somebody else, and say, look, I wonder if you could, you know, move on after an hour. And there's no law that says you have to, but there was sort of an agreement, yeah, okay, give them an hour, I'll be tolerant for an hour, and then move on. That's not an hour after they arrived, it's an hour after they're asked to, you know, to move to another spot so that the spot can be vacated for another person. And that actually has been successfully used, and it was used to fend off a bunch of onerous restrictions being pushed by conservatives on the city council back in the early 80s here in Santa Cruz. And indeed, it was also used to dissolve a Kennedy-Rotkin attempt to essentially, I called it the drum out the drummers measure that was on the book, that was coming onto the books in 1996, but was a kind of fended off by Kennedy. And I want to give him credit for this. I gave him credit at the time. He's, as far as I'm concerned, his bank account is way in the red at this point. But he did do this one good thing that I remember, where he saw musician after musician coming up and saying, don't make, it was only after drummers. Drummers were the only ones not allowed to perform on Pacific Avenue after 8 o'clock at night. And it wasn't, no matter how loud they were, it would be illegal to perform drums after. It wouldn't be illegal to shout. It wouldn't be illegal to play the trombone. It would be illegal to drum after 8 o'clock at night. And it was supposedly couched as a measure for residents at older folks who are at the Palomar or the Centro apartment complex. Instead, I and Tom Noddy and others proposed a mediation, which Kennedy agreed to, and that law dissolved, and we thought for sure it was a slam dunk, because the first reading, it just rammed right through the city council. I think it was either 5-2 or 6-1, but the second reading, Kennedy just cracked and said, no, this is not good, we'll try mediation, and there haven't been a lot of problems with mediation. Drummers got together, evolved their own organization, found a way to deal with the problem out at its beach. There was some concern from some neighbors, and the community dealt with the issue. I mean, that's really how it should be. Not the cops and not the city council, but the community. Because unfortunately, we know that generally speaking, the city council is not no way representative of the community, doesn't listen to the community. Its ear is on the siren song of the dollars from the redevelopers. We've seen this in the Gateway Project. We saw this in the destruction of buildings like the Cooper House. It's a sad situation, and hopefully it can be changed by, in the next month, there's only a month left of electioneering to get a new council together in there. However, like many others who are broadcasting on this radio station, I don't have a lot of confidence in politicians. And the more I see of politicians who are willing to backtrack on human rights measures, the less I like it. But I guess I've said that a number of times. You also apparently were visiting a politician today. You went to the fundraising activities for a candidate, Linda Steinau, who's the Downtown Association, the Duchess, as I call her, their candidate. By the way, a very nice woman. Nothing against her personally. She's always been polite and amiable to me. But her positions are utterly horrible. And I read at the beginning of the show a number of flyer I wrote, which indicates what 4 years of Linda Steinau would mean, not the least of which is that she would be the fourth vote that keeps Rotkin, Matthews, and Hernandez in power. And they would bring back the Third Street realignment, they would bring back the boardwalk redevelopment, they would continue their process of parceling off the city to whatever chain stores want to come on down. So you said you wandered over to Steinau's shindig at Cloud's restaurant. How was that?
She was extremely amiable, as you said, but it seemed like another one of those petty bourgeois sort of meetings, you know what I mean, where everybody's going, how much money do you have, and how much money do you have, and of course I didn't have any, so, you know.
Did they offer you cookies and drinks?
No, they didn't offer me anything, as a matter of fact. You know, I just wanted to go meet the candidate, but you know, everybody else was drinking their little cocktails and being very amiable with each other. No one came up to actually speak to us. I was with Becky, of course, and another gentleman named Oscar. We decided to, you know, come in as another side of the question of the community of Santa Cruz, you know. And I got to say hi to her, and I got to show her my black eye, and since she has something to do with HCRC.
She has been on the Homeless Community Resource Center board for 4 years. That's part of what I consider this kind of two-faced strategy. It's not really, it's not true that it's duplicitous in a conscious way. I would call it more like self-delusional. She's one of the merchants who supports the Homeless Community Resource Center, probably because she genuinely has concern about homeless people. Many, many business people do. But of course, it only goes as far as, making sure that they don't come downtown and making sure that there's a sleeping ban in place and all these other anti-homeless laws, which show that it's a pretty superficial concern for the homeless in terms of their basic civil rights. But she has been on the board of directors of the Homeless Community Resource Center for, 4 years, as well as she was the head of the Downtown Association, which pushed these nasty laws through in the first place in 1994. Even as Berkeley was struggling with this law, Santa Cruz was passing it. You may remember back in 1994. Sit on the sidewalk, go to jail, ask for a dime after dark, go to jail. Nasty, vicious laws passed with the amiable endorsement of Linda Steinau and Scott Kennedy, who now backs Linda Steinau for city council. So you talked to Linda. What did she tell you?
Well, she didn't really have much to say. She pretty much took a defensible position. She was very
defensible or defensive?
Well, defensive position as we came in. She took one look at Becky and myself and Oscar and it wasn't a good look that came upon her face. I mean, she was amiable and all that, but
she put on her football helmet, so to speak.
Yes, more or less, and she got us sidetracked into Mr. Daryl Darling, I believe his name.
Daryl Darling. Those who don't know, Daryl Darling was the man who sold out the Coral Street Open Air Shelter. He and Paul Marceau ran the program where there was a legal place for people to sleep. Some people between 1994 and 95 on the property now occupied by the Community House Trailers. And Darling was supposedly head of the open air shelter program, as well as he was one of the negotiators appointed by the Citizens Committee for the Homeless to do that. He now, of course, is big into the campaigns of Linda Steinau, a big supporter of Scott Kennedy, a supporter of the Beach Boardwalk, part of the redevelopment-minded majority. And a man, by the way, it's very difficult to listen to for more than a minute and a half. He's just an endless blatherer. I have to say this, Daryl, you have to learn to abbreviate your remarks. I suppose I do too, but you are just insufferable. It's incredible. And I don't say this to be offensive and rude, but it is the truth. Anyway, Darling broke his word to campers at the Coral Street Open Air Shelter back in 1995. They were supposed to have until January 1st, or until SOS, was the group, Save Our Shelter, that had a deal with Daryl Darling not to evict them in the middle of winter. And they were evicted with Kennedy and Rotkin essentially calling in the cops and Darling leading the way, all with a sanctimonious air because he's some kind of a religious, has some religious credentials. He also is a merchant, has a bed and breakfast place on the west side. He did a little benefit for United Farm Workers and the Resource Center for Nonviolence last weekend up on Westcliff at his house, his bed and breakfast place. But you say he came and spoke to you? What was that about?
Well, I don't know. My overall impression was he was more or less a sort of a bourgeois sort of person.
Did Steinau ever answer any of your questions?
Oh, no. She said this was not the time or the place to be doing that sort of thing. She's having a party, so she just wants to party. And issues are not something that
you ask her for some potato chips or some dip.
Well, I didn't even get a chance to because she kind of
party without you.
Yes, more or less. She kind of glided on down the road there, to her buddies.
And there might be some scraps, folks. Of course, this is supposed to run from 5 to 7. You get down to Clouds right away, and you might be able to get some of the leftover dips. Of course, the main dips are the people who are doing the partying, it appears. But
well, they had some pizza. They had pizza.
Did you get a piece of pizza?
No, I wasn't even offered a piece of pizza. And I wasn't offered a drink either. Fortunately, the waitress was kind enough to bring me a glass of water.
Right.
Yeah.
So did you hear anything else? Did Steinau talk to either Oscar or Becky Johns?
No. She kind of glided off with her friends, as I said, all her petty bourgeois friends, and the money people that I'm sure she invited to come party with her so that they can all make their little war plans, so we got sidetracked into Mr. Daryl Darling, who decided that he would hold us at bay and keep us away from her.
How did he do that?
Well, he said, this is not the time or the place for us to be discussing these sorts of things. You need to make an appointment with her, okay? I showed her my black eye, and she feigned a certain amount of surprise, and shock and dismay, but...
You don't think she felt that way?
Well, it was all of 2 seconds worth, and she was off to the pizza,
That pizza could be pretty tasty. So Darling sort of played the bouncer here, or did they didn't ask you to leave?
No, I think they had the better part of valor in that respect. That would not have been a very wise move because we wouldn't have left anyway. You know what I'm saying? So
you decided to leave because you got tired of listening to Daryl Darling?
Well, no, we did have some discussion. We did get tired of him, but we did have some discussion with him. Becky decided that she would talk to him about some certain things, and I'm sure you'll get her on the air about that.
Looks like we got a caller here.
Hi, you're on Free Radio Santa Cruz.
Yeah. Hi, this is Becky, and
The third party, or one of the parties to the Darling Steinau soiree.
Right. Well, the first thing that happened when we came in the door was Linda said to me, Becky, we don't want any videotaping here.
I see.
Now, I had my video camera flung around my neck, mm-hmm. and I had taken some opening shots, time and date stamped,
where
and what. But I wasn't planning on videotaping. In fact, I told her that. I said, I'm not planning on doing any videotaping.
Well, you know, it's interesting. She must have been talking to Scott Kennedy, because, as we know, when you went into and you did some videotaping of the Resource Center for Nonviolence's call in the cops and set up a snitch headquarters at the Resource Center for Nonviolence.
At the one public meeting that they had on that issue?
At their one public meeting, which split the Resource Center for Nonviolence apart, Kennedy spent 20 minutes along with Eric Larson denouncing you for this and denouncing me for trying to audio record this. This was last spring. And yet, more recently, he's asked you for a copy of the tape. So maybe Linda will come around and ask you for some tapes.
Well, frankly, I didn't want to waste any tape on that gathering. However, I was carrying the camera defensively in case they tried to throw us out.
Mm-hmm.
And that was my intent, was if they were going to try to throw us out, then I would at least videotape them giving us the bum's rush.
Mm-hmm.
They did ask us to leave at least 5 times, which
really?
I thought was quite rude, since we were as civil as any other people that had come to attempt to meet with the candidate. I did get my drink. The waitress got me a tonic and lime.
And did that enrage Linda Steiner?
they didn't look too happy with the our apparent determination to ignore their overt hostility, I must say.
It's kind of strange, Becky, because last Saturday, I believe it was last Saturday, I was at the Cooper House where they were doing opening ceremonies for the groundbreaking for the Cooper House. And this apparently had been publicly announced, and I came in, and immediately two hard hats confronted me and said, you can't go in there, it's private. And so I contented myself initially with a few catcalls identifying Kennedy, who sports this kind of elbow brace or elbow bandage or elbow, what do you call it, sling,
mm-hmm.
because apparently he's injured his elbow as the Seaside Company.
I know how that happened. Yeah, Charles Canfield says, okay, who's going to help me pass the beach area plan? And Scott Kennedy shot his hand up in the air so fast he broke his elbow.
I see. Well, you know, that's
it was a terrible accident.
It could have happened that way.
He did it for the city.
But in any case, I initially had this.
He deserves a medal.
I had a similar problem at the Cooper House groundbreaking, and I just eventually walked over like you did. And these hard hats are saying, why are you giving trouble? You, we have to call the cops. I said, well, let me talk to another media person, since I was there for Free Radio Santa Cruz recording what was going on. And I talked to John Woolfolk, and we had some chatter, and eventually they decided to leave me alone. But, so you say 5 times they asked you to leave.
Yeah, 5 times. It was, we can't discuss that here. This is neither the time nor the place for this. You'll have to schedule an appointment.
Discuss what? Discuss what?
Well, that's a good question. I thought that this was, you know, meeting with the candidates, and certainly when you meet your candidate, you're going interested in how they're likely to perform should they get on the council.